Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Hey, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, phone in for Stephanie Koenig this morning. S&P futures up 12. Dow futures up 156. But as usual, that's not the whole story. I had the S&P's down like 50 last night at one point when we opened. Dow is down, I'm going to say, 300 to 400. And somewhere during the night, the president must have seen the market. Won't say that he told some of his family members to get long and said, talk to the Chinese. They're anxious to get back to the table, which, of course, the Chinese deny. Kevin, I don't know, man. This is getting weirder.
They denied it?
Yeah. They don't know about any phone call.
The vice premier on Monday is quoted as saying China's willing to resolve its trade dispute with the United States through calm negotiations and resolutely opposes the escalation of the conflict.
They don't deny that.
He went on to say that we believe the escalation of the trade war is not beneficial for China, the United States, nor to the interests of the world. So that is a bit of a softening from them.
Right. The question on the table trade-wise is, did they make two calls last night? They've denied that.
Well, you know, I don't know. Who knows if they did or not? We are not dealing with the most honest people on either side of this equation.
No, but I'll tell you what we are trading with. We're trading with people that are making 50 points of spoo every time they do something. And that's starting to really aggravate me as a trader. Because I don't trust either side to not be trading it. I mean, it's way too obvious. I mean, I sure don't trust the Chinese to not be trading their phone calls. I mean, why would I trade? Why would I trust the guys around this guy? Anyway, I'm just
don't know that you would.
Yeah,
I don't. So I don't know why you would. But you know, I mean, the point is there are some softening public statements there that I. You know how useful that is. I don't know. We've had so many softening public statements in the past and commentaries from both sides of the equation. So I don't know what to make of it, but there is some commentary out there in the ether over and above we just flat out deny it.
Well, however we get there, we definitely need to do that. I mean, we all agree on that, I think. I don't see there's a couple of things that are just odd. I mean, the dude thinks the tariffs are good and that it's money for us, and I was on the way in this morning talking about the lobster industry, which I would never even dreamed. Their exports of lobster to China are down 80%. I mean, there's people getting hurt all over the place, and to keep denying that people are it's probably not good campaign rhetoric to talk about how bad your people are getting whacked by this thing, but it's not good
Of course it's not. As you might remember, Jimmy Carter's great national malaise.
Yeah, well, that's right.
If you don't come off optimistic, then yeah, you're gonna suck on the campaign trail. It's one of the reasons why, one of the things we're seeing on the Democratic side of the House is everybody has the pessimistic message. They're willing to tell you what's all wrong, and they have plans, but there is a distinct lack of optimism, and I just think that's they have to figure that out between now and this time next year.
Well, in the mortal words of Bob Johnson, who, when we had the Amtrak contract, Bob was an old car knocker, old line program manager, as the contract went off wheels, pretty much, and Bob realized that it had. So, of course, he was reasonably negative to management, saying that we got to stop this or we got a real problem. So Bob was banned from all the meetings. And finally, after like a month of being in jail or in jug, they said, okay, Bob, you can come back, because they needed him. So he didn't say a word at the meeting. And afterward, the guy said, we like you much better like this. Bob, you were so positive. Oh, I'm positive, all right. I'm positive we really are messed up. So, and you know what? He went on to be the contract that was a break even through how many audits when I was there, I did a, at the direction of my boss to show it to no one else, I did a, estimate that I thought we were going to lose $250 million. It turns out they managed to get a, I was within $1 million, Kevin. It was so obvious. I just went to the formulas they had used for the last 100 years and I just used the formulas 3 different ways. I'm like, God, this is pretty bad. I'll use a different formula. Maybe it'll be better, and it wasn't. But, I think the reason why the Democrats have such a real issue with coming up with a solution is I'm not so sure there are any. That unless both sides really, really work together and start taking them off one at a time, I don't see how you, I don't even know where to start. I mean, there's a lot of places.
It's always, nothing's going to get fixed in a president's term, in a couple of years. Well, whatever timeline you want to put on it. So you have to set direction, and setting direction requires some a fair dose of cooperation along the way. But you know, my point about this is that leaders see obstacles. They can certainly see what's wrong, but leaders also, are incredibly optimistic. Where you can tell I'm gearing up for the first management class of the year, of the semester.
You're fired
but,
up. Yeah.
They're incredibly optimistic. They everything is, we can do this. We can overcome this. We will fix this. And team, we can do it. And that's the part I'm not hearing at this point. Is how are we going to get there, and what's the end game look like? Because there's always this, what's it going to be like when we're all done, when we've achieved what we want to achieve? And if you can't describe that, and you have to do it succinctly, then people have a hard time latching on to it.
Well, I think we have a. This is not just me being somewhat cynical, Kevin. It's me being around these numbers. I mean, I don't know that anybody else was around inflation numbers like I was in 1977 doing the inflation calculations for a big company. And so I get the drill and how much it appeals and works its way through the system. And I always knew the difference between the labor unions who by that time, not early on in the cycle, by that time had managed to get escalation clauses, inflation clauses in their contracts, and did a lot of suppliers and those kinds of things. They also knew the people who didn't have escalation clauses in their contracts, people who were management, meaning me, that it was a real problem for. I mean, one year they said, geez, I was one of their best employees, so they gave me the full 5% allowed raise for management people. I said, I just did the union thing, and I just did our supplier stuff. They're all up 12% because that's what the inflation was before the raise. You're not doing me any favors. They said, well, no, we're not doing anybody any favors, management. We're doing you, like, the best favor. I says, so I'm actually
we're doing you the least bad.
Yeah, so I'm actually only down 7% last year. Well, yeah, you could look at it that way. Well, I am, type of thing. Wow. But, I mean, I look at these numbers, Kevin, and, people send in stuff, and I read it. But I was having a discussion with somebody. We had there's a party down in Ogden Dunes, and we're talking about the whether we're going to go into recession. And everybody's convinced that there's no way we're going to recession. I said, well, if you define recession, so the article that I dug up, I think I sent it to you, the one about the people who have had people who have hospitalization paid for allegedly by their work. And in the last 8 to 10 years, if you add in there the little contributions people make, or they all of a sudden, like 5 years ago, you had to contribute $50 a month, then it was $100 a month, and then the deductible came 1,000 instead of 500. Now it's up to 5,000. If you take all that into consideration, according to this lady who wrote the article, and she seemed like she did some pretty good work, the increases in health insurance, if you're covered, have increased more than the people's wages over that period of time. So if you define a recession as 2 quarters in a row of income going the wrong way, there's massive chunks of this population that see that happen every quarter. And so, how do you define a recession on these gross numbers for the whole country that who the hell knows even is doing them? If you look at those, you may never go to recession because somebody can play with them. You look at individual people, I see people in recession all over the place. Not to mention the ones that never came out of it in 2008 if you own a home. So, I mean, however you look at these numbers, I mean, there you can make a massive case for things ain't so high. Now, from a Democratic side, you look at all this stuff and you say, okay, how do I get? But another thing, Kevin, is the law of large numbers versus the law of small numbers. If you look at the where people's salaries have been the last 25, 30 years, it goes past presidents of both parties, Congress of both parties, you'll find that, I mean, if you look at any of the inflation stuff, you know, say people are up 30% in their salaries in the last 20 years, I mean, immediate income. And yet, some stuff is up 1,000%, 700%, 500%. You know, school tuition, those kinds of things. But now you're at a point where the numbers are so skewed that even if somebody, if somebody makes the low wage earner goes from $10 an hour to 11, it seems like it's 10%, but it's 10% from so far behind. You can't compare that 10% that if the wages or if the prices go up like 3% this year, which it looks like they're going to, the ones they count, that 3% can be more than the 10%. You know what I'm saying? Because the numbers are so screwed up. If the wage numbers are based on a different bottom line, in other words, you're talking about a buck. You see the same thing in the market right now. They'll say, you know, Kevin O'Neill Inc. is up 20%. The thing was $3. It's up 60%, 60 cents. Who cares? I mean, you care if you own it, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, you care if you have 50 million shares out
right
there, but if Kevin O'Neill Inc. is just my small, tight, closely held family business, then that valuation is not significant. So, yeah, significance is always the question. It's like when, you know, I've been through this with enough companies and always make the recommendation, is when they say, well, you know, we're given 3% increases this year because that's what we can afford. Okay, you do the math. If somebody's making, pick a number, whatever the hourly wage is, what are you doing? What are you really putting in? So, you know, say it's 3%, on, let's do a nice easy number, 3% on $50,000. So 3% times $50,000 is $1,500 less taxes is probably going to be closer to $1,000. Divide that by 26 paychecks. And what are you looking at? You know, is it really going to make a difference in anybody's life? So in that case, what I always say is, well, why don't you just pay it out in a lump sum so that people can at least have a noticeable impact and maybe go for a good night out or something like on the money. And then always the concern of that is, of course, it's not really it doesn't go into my base, so next year I'm working off the same base. Well, that seems fixable too. But, you know, this is, I agree with you, significance matters. And so when you say wages are up a certain percentage, and you say, is that making a difference in people's lives? And in many cases, the answer is no. In some cases, the answer is yes.
But even in real, I think we have an issue with relativity, and that we're not being Einstein. We had talked about, you know, Governor Pritzker dropping his 40 grand minimum on teachers. Now, everybody knows, as a guy who's been educated a lot and have friends that are still educating people like you, I incredibly share the value of teachers, probably more than most. Yet I also know, in the pantheon of jobs, history, not saying history is right or wrong, but there was a time when people made 25 grand working in factories, you know, skilled labor and so forth, and teachers were making 15 or 12. I'm not saying that was ever right, but those were the numbers. Okay, now, again, not, and now all of a sudden, those same people in the factories are making damn near the same number, maybe a little more, and the teachers are making a minimum of like of 40, whatever you want to put in. So if they all get the same raise, if the teachers now get a 5% raise and everybody else manages to get a 5% raise, if they ever do, the people now that are paying the teachers are now the part going over the fence last, because their 5% raise might turn out to be $1,200 a year, where the teachers is $2,000 a year. Well, if you keep doing that for the next 50 years, I think you got an awful lot of people not being able to pay those salaries, Kevin, because the relativity part of it starts creeping in. Just saying.
Yep. Well, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. We are as a society, we're not very good at math.
No. Speaking of math, what sort of shocked the world? Are you a guy who's got $1 million on the Indianapolis Colts and now your guy retired?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna love that bet. No, I don't have any money down.
I've
read some stuff this morning that indicates that the Colts have kind of known this was coming for a while.
And didn't tell anybody.
It's too bad for them. You know, I don't begrudge Andrew Luck this. He gave it a shot, and he said, I can't get myself ready to play, and I can't keep doing this. So I get it from his standpoint, and I have nothing bad to say about his decision. It's just kind of tough because the Colts, were not in a position to deal with the quarterback spot the way a team would have if they had known at the end of the year. So this is going to be a tough year for them, and we'll see where that drives them. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know enough about the Colts, even though they are the local team. They are the team that the Bears and the Colts are what's on TV here as primary markets. But I just don't know enough about them to know if they're going to be mediocre, if they're going to be really bad. They have some other nice pieces, so maybe they'll be decent. And I don't know if that's going to get them a high draft pick to get a quarterback anyway.
What I remember when I was young and more of a fan. Well, actually, I was a fan. I'm not really much anymore. Dick Butkus, God, if he just could play one more week, and he didn't even realize the guy, he needed, what, 5 knee surgeries to get his knee back on top of the bottom part of the knee. I mean, he was so messed up. You know, your idea is, can a guy just give me one more day out there because I like watching him? Or worse, I'm betting on him. You know, and it's the toll it takes on some of these guys. I mean, this dude is... His injuries haven't exactly been hangnails. I mean, he had a lacerated kidney, he had something else. And finally, he's like, this just isn't for me. I'm with him. I mean, he was fun to watch. So he was a hell of a quarterback. He was from Southern Cal, right?
Stanford.
Stanford, that's right. Who was the guy from Southern Cal?
So you have a couple of things with him. He's a guy who could have gone out early and didn't. So he finished a degree. He has a Stanford degree. He's well educated, and he's made pretty darn good money as an NFL quarterback. And I'd say, he has a good start on real life, and a realistic point of view. So I hope for his sake that he's not so damaged at this point that that it's going to be a serious negative impact on his life, but who knows?
Well, let's hope not. Is he going to be on TV anytime soon? Like, does he have the gorgeous girlfriend like all quarterbacks seem to have?
I don't know, and honestly, I don't know if he has the kind of personality for TV. So some people pull it off better than others. You may remember the 1 year that Joe Montana was, I think he was in studio as an announcer, and he just wasn't good at it. He's not that that kind of. It's funny because I'm about to say he's not that kind of big personality, but when he went into a huddle, he was exactly the big personality.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That
Tony Romo was spectacular.
But that's not who he was in real life, and it came through, or frankly, didn't come through at all on the on camera. So he lasted a year and went on to do more shaving cream commercials instead.
Well, meantime, Tony Romo is spectacular.
Yeah, he is. He's really good.
Yeah,
it just varies from one to the next. You don't know what to expect.
I'm surprised that, given the fact that his background, A-Rod's got such a career going. I mean, talk about remaking yourself from the most hated man in baseball.
Yeah, Well, I will say this about Romo and about A-Rod is that one thing I always noticed through his career was that he was a big fan of baseball in general. He knew the history. He could, you know, he wasn't a guy playing because he was talented. He was a guy playing because he really, really loved baseball. And I think that does come through on his broadcasts. He'll follow it. If he weren't working in baseball, he'd be following it closely. If the Hall of Fame weren't coming up, he'd still know everything about everybody who's going into the Hall of Fame, who's been in the Hall of Fame in the past, and so on. He really does love the sport.
Well, he also seems like he, even though I'm not so sure they talked him much near the end, he really liked his teammates.
Seems like it.
I think that's the opposite for Andrew Luck, who I don't think likes the sport, and I think he was just really good at it and played it. And I think that's how you can walk away when everyone has bad injuries, but guys like Aaron Rodgers or Brady or something like that come back and they're banged up and they would never quit. They're going to play as long as they can. And that's okay, but I don't think he did love football.
Well, the football.
I don't know that, but in Luck's case, some of his injuries were a little more severe than others because I think we're talking about things like, didn't he have a lacerated kidney?
Yeah, you're talking about internal organs.
I think he had a seriously injured back, which, you know, it's one thing when you have your ACL fixed. It's another when it's your back, because chronic back problems through your life are just awful.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't comment beyond what I've already said about Luck because I just don't know enough about him as a guy.
I think we're talking about a sport that's going. I mean, I love playing touch football. I played in the leagues in Mount Greenwood and everything, but the idea of grown men going out and putting the pads. I mean, the incidence of injury. It's not like baseball. It's not like basketball. I mean, you can hurt your ankle playing basketball in a pickup game, but. Nobody ever doesn't play a pickup game because they think they're going to walk away with a debilitating injury. But I don't know anybody over the age of 30 that dons the pads and goes plays tackle football, do they?
No.
I mean, we're talking about difference in, I watched some of the game last night. The Steelers are playing somebody. And evidently, Mike Tomlin, they decide that they hope they don't have anybody hurt, but they hit more than anybody else in camp. And evidently, they played a lot of their, starters last night. I mean, they want to be more prepared than the Patriots, the first game they play up there. You know, they want to be ready to hit and be ready for in mid-season form. Now, that's certainly a difference of opinion than the Bears coach. SP Futures up 14, Dow Futures up 177. Big turn since last night. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold. The idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. Tom Lee's Mr. Mike Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Huge turnaround in the market from last night. You could have made 50, 60 spoo points maybe. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 64. I had them down like 100 last night or 95 or something. Individual stocks bouncing back up as Apple was down $10 on Friday. It's up $3.91. Boeing up $8.79 as they're convinced a lot of people are saying they're going to have their approval on a 737 anytime soon, although Boeing claims they're not making an application for reapproval until September, so I don't know who to believe there. Dow's up 189. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 52 and FTSE up down 33. Gekron up 33. Asia, Nikkei was down, is down 2%. Evidently, it's supposed to come after they were closed. All this new we're all going to get together thing. They're down 449. Shanghai down 33, 1.2%. Hang Seng down 499, 1.9%. So, obviously, as much as we were down, and these guys are down, both leaders have came out this morning, I'm going to say in a brazen attempt to talk their markets up that they're going to get back to the table, and it's working in this end. So if we hang in there, I got to believe these guys will flip around tonight. Bonds, 10-year unchanged at 1.52. The Bund still minus 0.66. Japan minus 2.27. We've got oil 55 cents, 54.72. Brent up 48 cents to 59. Gold up $1. Last night it was up like 20-some. Silver's up 14 cents. It was up 27 last night. Absolutely unbelievable. This kind of turnaround, it seems just like a regular morning, but it's not. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. But we advise all Stocks and Jocks listeners to go to luckboxmagazine.com/jocks and sign up for a free digital subscription. That's the move. If you haven't done it already, we do it, or we recommend doing it. We've all done it already, and it's worth it. We're off to a good start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but we do have one crash in the area, US 41 northbound,
between Clayby Road and Deerfield Road in the northern suburbs. There is a crash that has US 41 completely closed on the northbound side, so keep that in mind. But if you're coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, still looking okay. We do have some rain in the area, and that's causing expressways to slow down a bit, but no accidents on the Eisenhower or Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking okay as well. Weather today, as I mentioned, thunderstorms on and off throughout the day, a high of 75, high humidity when it's not raining. Right now it's rainy and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, mostly clear today with a high of 108. Right now it's partly cloudy and 89. In sports, not a good weekend for the Cubs at Wrigley. They were swept in a three-game set versus the Nationals, losing yesterday 7-5 in 11 innings. Cubs are now 2.5 back of the Cardinals. We'll get into the standings here in a second. White Sox shut out the Angels 2-0. Sox have won 6 of the last 10. Diamondbacks beat the Brewers 5-2 as they're trying to hang on to a wild card spot, or get back in the wild card race, I should say. So as we take our Monday morning look at the MLB standings, White Sox are now 60-70, 10 games below 500. They're in third place in the AL Central, 19 back of the first place Twins. The Cubs are now 2.5 back of the Cardinals in the NL Central, 69-61, dropping 3 in a row. They're 500 in their last 10. According to ESPN, they still have a 66.1% chance of making the playoffs, but that's down about 12% from heading into Friday morning. So not a good weekend for them at a critical time. Diamondbacks, meanwhile, are 65-66, one game below 500. They're 20.5 back in the NL West. But as we pull up the wild card standings, which is, this factors in for the Cubs as well, the Cubs hold the second wild card spot. They're 4 back of the Nationals, who have the first wild card spot. A game and a half up on the Phillies. Brewers are 2 back. Mets are 2 back. Giants are 4 back. And the Diamondbacks are 4.5 back in that NL wild card race. So it's going to be interesting here, with about, 6 weeks to go in the season. Chief.
You think they got enough gas?
The Cubs?
Yeah.
I mean, they need Contreras back, and he's coming back soon. This Rizzo thing, you know, he missed yesterday with back stiffness, and this seems to flare up on him every month or two, where he'll miss a game or two because of it. Hopefully that's not serious. You know, they got a good outing from Hamels yesterday. It was just a, you know, they're playing against a really good team. The Nationals have been maybe the best team in the National League over the last month. The Cubs in the month of August have really played a tough schedule, and they have to hang around here because the Cardinals are red hot and they're beating up on some last place teams, and you can't fall too far behind.
No, I would. Milwaukee looks like, well, the Cardinals look like they were dead a month ago.
Yeah, no, it's the Brewers, I'm sure, still have a run left in them. I think the Cubs will as well. I think the Cardinals are looking good right now. It's going to be a great race in the NL Central. And then the wild card, the Nats, the way they're playing, I mean, they might not only win the wild card, they may catch the Braves. I mean, that team with the starting pitching that they have and then that lineup, I think they can play with anybody.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. I was watching the Yankees-Dodgers a little bit last night. Wow, those guys are stacked.
Well, yeah, those two teams, I would say, maybe along with the Astros, are the favorites right now. If you were going to pick the World Series, it would probably be Yankees-Dodgers.
What do you think?
As I looked at the, and I'll use yesterday's game for contrast, but the whole weekend was like this. The Nationals guys go up to the plate with a plan. They make contact. They don't swing at crap. And if you just look at the box score from yesterday, they struck out 6 times in 11 innings and had 14 hits. And you contrast that with the Cubs, who had 7 hits and struck out 14 times. And it seems like with the Cubs, it's a home run or a strikeout. Now that's an oversimplification.
Yeah, you sound like me.
But it's, you know, it's kind of there, and their swing and miss rates are just terrible. And in many cases, it's because they're swinging at crap. And that kind of stuff drives me nuts. I mean, again, you can tell I'm preparing for a management class because what I always tell my students is there are two things in the world that offend me like nothing else. One of them is bad management, and the other one is bad baseball. and I've seen a lot of bad baseball out of the Cubs lately.
Well, some pretty powerful hitters on the Nationals hit the ball the other way right when they needed it last night or yesterday. And you don't see the Cubs doing that a little more, but not.
I was traveling this weekend, so I didn't get to see Friday or Saturday, but I watched the whole game Sunday, and to Kevin's point, I don't know if I've ever seen the Cubs swing at more balls that were 3 feet outside. Now, Strasburg's slider is pretty amazing and electric, and he's known for making guys look bad. But there is, I mean, guys swinging at balls that are 2 feet outside in big situations, and that just kills you.
They never had a chance in a Lester game, and if Lester is picking this particular time to run out of gas, this is a bad time. But it sure looks like out of his last 8 starts, how many of them have been good?
I think just like one or two.
Yeah.
But like Matt said, it's one thing if Strasburg has time to set you up for that pitch that's, 8 inches out of the strike zone. But it's another if you swing at that on the first pitch. That just tells me you're up there and you were just going for the downs on the first pitch no matter where it was. And that kind of stuff is just, it's just a bad approach. And it irritates me to no end. It would irritate me to watch another team doing that. And if you watch the Dodgers, they're like the Nationals. They're really, really good at going up there with a plan. They have a lot of guys that are that way. Understand RBI situations. You don't have to hit a home run when you have runners on second and third. Why you would go up there swinging from the heels is beyond me when you're in an RBI situation.
Well, what do you think?
There was another interesting comment. Might have been, I think it was Len Casper, said one of the things that the Astros have done is when you get that pitch right on the edge with two strikes, they were actually coaching their hitters not to swing at those, because your chances of getting the call from the umpire, for especially if it's ball four, like if it's 3-2, are way better than your chances of getting a hit on that pitch.
Well, it's what do you think the pecking order sort of the problem is? I mean, the Cubs guys are not that old. Now they won the World Series obviously in 16, so that's 3 years ago. And I mean, I know when Sarge was still here as the batting coach, I remember them interviewing and they said, "Well, do you take some people aside?" He goes, "No, they come to you." He goes, "This is the major leagues, but you don't. These guys are making way more than I am. They. I will help them if they let me, if they want me to." And now we're 3 hitting coaches away, and we're doing sort of the same thing. And we have a manager who clearly is a guy who's been in charge. I mean, he should deserve all the respect for winning World Series and stuff. And he'll rail after the game about, yet this next game they'll do the exact same thing. I mean, is there any kind of, I mean, obviously it's not like college where if you don't do what the coach says, you know, you're like off the team, or whatever. But, I mean, is there any middle ground? I mean, why do the people on the Nationals, did they get down in a meeting one day and say we want to win and let's do what the coach says? Or what is the difference? I don't get it.
Well, if you ever, I don't know that this came out in the movie, but if you ever read the book Moneyball, one of the things that Billy Beane always contended is a guy is who he is, but you know, by the time he's 20, 21, you know, that age, he is who he is. You're not going to make, say, a Javier Baez into a disciplined hitter and a guy who's going to take a lot of walks at age 25. It's just not going to happen. And that was why he was so insistent on drafting guys out of college instead of drafting guys out of high school, because he really wanted to know who that guy really was. In the Cubs' case, I think they missed Dexter Fowler a lot. He always had a good approach at the plate, whether he was having a great season or not. And he hasn't been replaced. And I think they missed Ben Zobrist a lot, because he always would give you a good at-bat and had a good plan when he went up there. I think when you start taking those guys out of there, out of the lineup, and you know who's going in instead, is you're getting guys who swing and miss a lot.
Well, that is true. I mean,
it's one thing to say, well, Javier Baez is who he is, and you know that's pretty darn good, and we'll take it. But he can bat sixth. Instead, you're putting him, you know, fourth, and you're counting on more. And you run into that. I think, you know, it's 20% plus of the lineup, and that is missing, that used to give you a good approach and doesn't anymore, and it shows up.
You know,
always had 20% who didn't anyway. So now it's four of your 8 hitters instead of 2 of your 8 hitters, and I think that's noticeable.
I think what's actually happening, this is just one observation. Obviously, Manny watches a lot more than me. The differences between the games when they're doing good versus the games when they're going up against a pretty tough pitcher. When they're they're winning, and it's easy for them. You can see they really are trying to work on the other approach. Like, I was watching a game last week where Schwarber hit two the other way, although he was hitting his home runs the other way. Rizzo, all these guys, you know, poked one through the shift and everything. When they were up, you know, 5-2, it was easy for them. But get them in a pressure situation, they drop back to, like you say, who they are, trying to pull it over the fence. But
I think most people are like that, no matter what discipline you're discussing. You get under pressure, you revert. It's just like Pete, you know, I go back to my bad managers thing. You can teach managers to do better, to treat people better, to be good motivators. And then when things get really tough, they may turn into the same, let's say inartful. Let's say, they turn into the same miserable bastards they always were. I do think you see a lot of that, in the Cubs. Schwarber is a bad example because Schwarber is a guy who, you know, he walks a lot. He's very, very disciplined at the plate, but Schwarber's problem is, and it's always been Schwarber, this goes back a long way, he swings and misses a lot. that's just it. He swings and his swing and miss rate is higher than almost anybody in Major League Baseball. So he's going to hit a lot of home runs for you. He's going to hit some long ball. But if you go look, he's a guy who should have a lot of extra base power, and he has like half of the doubles that he has home runs.
Yeah, it's
he doesn't make enough contact.
It's either gone or not. It's a odd situation. So Kevin, what do you think? Is this guy actually going to run against Trump, the guy in the Republican?
It won't matter if he does.
You sort of never know. They thought nobody could possibly beat Bush 1, and they did, the mantle fell to Clinton, and the guy self-destructed ahead of him. I mean, you never know.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and everybody wants to be, and you know, you see the same thing on the Democratic side, the people who have no chance whatsoever, who are, and you're wondering why they're still in the race, but it's kind of, everybody hopes to be the Rick Santorum or Mike Huckabee, somebody who kind of gets some traction. Whether he wins or not, the profile gets to be higher for a while. And those guys, were kind of the out-of-nowhere candidates on the Republican side who wound up finishing second or third in the race. So I think everybody wants to do that. But I like Joe Walsh a lot on the Hotel California album. I didn't like him as much on some of the others, but now that he's in politics, I don't know what to make of him.
Well, I think
I will say this: he's not much of a contrast to Trump. So, first of all, he used to be a big Trump supporter. He said before the last election, on November 8th, I'm voting for Trump. On November 9th, if Trump loses, I'm grabbing my musket. You in? So is this going to be the big contrast that we have for Trump? He said he would support tougher border legislation, even if it involved building moats and filling them with alligators. He's got another quote, watch out, Black Lives Matter punks, real America is coming after you. Is this the guy that's going to be our choice to compare to Trump?
Well, if you want that same group that is allegedly the Trump, support stronghold.
Yeah, but that same group likes Trump. Why are they going to change for this?
You have to want, I sense the tone change. Of course, it'll be forgotten by tomorrow, but the idea of that he can, I noticed a change, Kevin. It's not just policy I don't necessarily agree with, although a lot of his policies I do agree with, by the way. But the idea that, he's going to tell people to leave China. I think everybody, and then he said this weekend, I can just declare an emergency situation. It's like, why doesn't he say I can just blow off a nuclear bomb if I want to? I mean, people are getting this idea that the guy's nuts. I mean, not just disagrees with you, but that he maybe shouldn't be in that spot. I'm not saying I'm there yet, but I see here some of this stuff, and I don't think there's something going on where the pressure's getting to him or whatever. I don't know, but this weekend was.
Is who he always was, which is why I don't like him.
But you put pressure on people, they're gonna. they react. We used to have we had a class in a management school. Well, the guy we took for management, University of Chicago, and he was saying that when you put pressure on people, they like. Somebody asked him about pressure in sports, and he said, "If you're good enough, pressure helps. If you're not, it hurts." And you go the wrong way. I mean, if you're good enough as a baseball pitcher, a pressure game brings out the best in you. If you're not, you realize you're not supposed to be there. It brings out the worst in you. I mean, it's a, I don't know, but I mean, this is amazing distortion. And then Larry Kudlow goes out and starts quoting some 1977 law that he can declare in a national emergency. Now, Kevin, you know that on this China situation, I think you do, that nobody has been closer or at least heard about this for many years than me, because I have a family member that was there right after Kissinger, for God's sake. And I've always been kind of fascinated by the whole routine. As a matter of fact, there were some people in Indiana this weekend that I was talking to, and they're talking about China being this, and I said, you know, it's always been very, very difficult. And I'm not, you know, lecturing to anybody. I said, but it's a very complicated issue. And somebody says, well, all right, explain that to us. I said, when you walked into the Oval Office 20 years ago, and it was somebody from Microsoft that said, hey, these bastards, there's 90 million desktops over there, and they bought, you know, exactly 10 copies of Microsoft Office, and guess what? The entire country's got Microsoft Office. This is BS. And you're sitting there going, okay, well, I guess I should maybe do something about that. And all of a sudden he leaves, and the guy from Coca-Cola comes in and says, whoa, there's a billion people over there drinking a Coke a day. What are you doing? Don't mess with anything. You know, and Boeing's saying, well, geez, we're selling them a third of our airplanes. Or Kentucky Fried Chicken. Hey, there's more pictures of the colonel over there in their armor. This is very uneven, Kevin, and it's very, very difficult to deal with. And now there's people walking around now saying that you know, China's like our enemy. And I've never been a fan, you know that. But the issue is bigger than that. And now this guy started this trade war. He wants these guys to cave in on a few issues. Kevin, it isn't a national emergency. He's the one who started it. There was no emergency here. It's a brush fire that he keeps bringing higher and higher, and now to solve his own brush fire. I mean, at the end of the day, none of the stuff he was concerned about is going to get fixed. Unless you say the Chinese can't buy places here, which he's not going to do because his buddies sell them to him, or if you say that if here's 400 products that if you give them the drawing to them, you're going to jail. We're not willing to do that either. So where are we? We're in this kind of middle ping pong ball where nobody gets hit and it's over the middle of the table the whole time. I honestly don't understand where we're going with this. I mean, it's anything but a national emergency that we didn't bring on ourselves.
Yeah, what we say earlier is there what's the end game going to look like so that we can all latch onto it? And I would say the answer to that is no.
But I mean,
we haven't laid out the end game for people, other than winning. I guess we're winning. I'll go even further on this, and my point would be this. My question would be this: is he really just trying to, put their, for lack of a better word, put their nuts in a vice, or what? And I'd be curious your opinion. Is this deal they announced with the Japanese over the weekend, is that going to put any more pressure on China, or are the Japanese much more willing to deal because of the China situation and saying, well, we can't do that?
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I haven't read enough about the South Korea Japan fight to figure out how that fits in either, because obviously it fits in somehow. I'd love to have, God, Kevin, if I could find a guest that, because I want to talk about, Far East relations between the different countries over there, and who likes who and who does trade with who and how much. Well, that's not in my wheelhouse. I mean, I wish it was, but we have to find somebody who knows that. I mean, how significant is that fight? Not to mention, David brings up the fact that how much influence does China still have over Vietnam?
Not nearly as much as it used to.
Well, I understand that, but is it enough that if all these companies in China just switch to Vietnam, they pull a string there? I don't know.
No, actually, you know, I've been reading a lot through, you know, supply chain channels. Vietnam has moved away from China economically because they've realized that the U.S. markets are just, you know, that's where the money is. So Vietnam has become much more aligned with the United States in terms of those. So when you start seeing the articles about the supply chains moving out of China and over to Vietnam, and the Chinese companies are doing that. Indeed, Chinese companies are sort of circumventing some of the tariffs by doing that, but that's a phenomenon that's been going on for a long time, and as a result of it, you have a lot of U.S. companies who otherwise would have gone to China or had been in China, and they're moving their supply chains as well. Over to, especially the stuff that's easily converted, you know, the low skill stuff, that in, now that this tariff situation has dragged on long enough, the trade war's dragged on long enough, that they're just saying, well, heck, forget it, we'll just move our operations to Vietnam. So in China's case, in that part of the equation, when their companies, move over there to avoid the tariffs, they're losing jobs. But when U.S. businesses stop producing there, it's one thing, they don't want to give up the China market, but on the other hand, when they're talking about production for the U.S. markets and they're producing in Vietnam, that is a loss of both the jobs and the profits.
Well,
and I think that's part of the squeeze that China's facing now is, and I've always wondered, you know, what will be the long-term effects of this now that it's dragged on so long. It'd be one thing if we had a 3-month trade war, but now we're looking at, you know, a year long now. Yeah. At this point, are we a year, are we longer than that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd say we're
but the longer it drags on, the more there's long-term impact.
I think we're in the deepest part of the hole we've been in right now. I mean, it's not like it's any better.
But I think that's causing some of the production to move, and that part of the equation, other than anything that would impact access to the market in China, that part of the equation is just a big hurt on China.
Well, as you know, Kevin, I always thought that this international flow of goods that I see people trying to react to it on TV, on a scale of 1 to 10, and understanding it, I'm going to say only because I've forced myself to, I'm probably a 3 or a 4, but if you start talking about all the different countries in Asia and who trades what with who to, you know, whether the part goes to Vietnam, to China to assemble to come here, I am a 0 on knowing who does what where and those things. I mean, I'd love to find out more. You sound like you know more about it than me.
Yes, I have to live in that world. After all, I am now a certified logistics
a professor.
You know, seriously, a lot has been changing anyway, and it's just accelerating. And Vietnam, Malaysia, you know, probably one or two other countries in the Far East are the beneficiaries of it. And if you look at their GDP numbers in recent years, it supports what's going on.
Malaysia's almost got as many
phenomenal growth because they're willing to take. They're willing to take the jobs and be easier to deal with than the Chinese.
Well, Malaysia's got population. I mean, it's at least half of the U.S., right?
Don't know that off the top of my head, but I'm sure our man in the studio can find that.
Did you? We got a dash here.
Malaysia population 31 million.
31.
One-tenth
okay,
of the U.S.
So about a tenth of the U.S.
What's the? I guess that whole
land mass is about, you know, 1/100th of the.
I guess
US.
I was looking at that whole Philippines, Malaysia, that whole island thing is a pretty big area if you take it all together. I guess I was looking at that. Did you say you were certified or certifiable?
Both.
Both. All right. Well, thank you for subbing in, buddy. We'll talk to you on Wednesday. We'll see when Steph wants to switch with you. S&P futures up 15. NASDAQ is up 53. Whole different program than last night. And Ms. Audrey Johnson after the break talking about something rational like mortgages and real estate. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here. Hello, welcome to Base Station Jacks. I'm Tom. I'm Mr. Member on the board of SP Futures now up 14 and a quarter. And NASDAQ Futures up 49 and a quarter as the debate continues in the financial press. The president saying China called twice. He flipped the market 50 points. And China saying they didn't call at all. This is just swell on a Sunday morning, starting, or Monday morning, starting another week. Hey, Odd, how are you?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you?
Well, just when you thought, as I took my truck to the Portage Car Wash yesterday, best place going, because if you have a big vehicle, instead of having a couple of schlumpy guys doing the inside of your cars, they have a bunch of young ladies, and they hop in and do the job. They, let's just say they're more limber than the big schlumps like me, and they do a gorgeous job. And just when we get downtown this morning, or the skies open up and it drops just enough rain on it just to dirty the whole truck. So there.
That's just ridiculous.
This is
the I don't know how you can stand that.
This is how the great start on a Monday morning. Just saying.
Especially after that young guy likes your truck so much.
Oh yeah, man. I get a load of this. I get there, and talk about serious truck envy. The guy was all over me. But oh man, look
truck
at this
envy.
The guy's, man, this thing's spectacular. Wow, it was a former Secret Service. Yeah, man, I can see the, you know, where the antennas were and stuff. And he goes, and I said, yeah, it's got the whole underside is all stainless. He goes, hey, can I drive it into the car wash? Sure. The guy was absolutely ecstatic. And he came running around the other end to make sure.
So were you. You were so excited. Somebody loved your truck.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely loved it. So that was a good Sunday morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. And the girls did a nice job inside. They gave him a nice tip. They were all happy. So it was a good Sunday morning, shall we say.
It was a win-win.
Win-win all across the board, yes.
Win-win, and I got donuts. It was a good day.
And Audrey got donuts, but then it rained this morning. And well, the good news is we're not down 50 points in the spool like we were last night, or 45, because we had a struggle with that. This is right where I need it here, which is fine. So everything's cool with that. So, Audrey, what's going on in the mortgage world? Plus, you're working on, without dropping any real hints here, you're working with some people that are looking to do some redevelopment in some of the bad neighborhoods in Chicago. Very positive situation. Might have one of the dudes on as a guest.
Well, I want to backtrack for a second. You guys are talking about the break about you know, retail and China and things going elsewhere. I would say, as from a consumer's point of view and a woman's consumer's point of view, part of the problem with retail that everybody's moaning about is there is nothing worth buying out there. I mean, if you go into a store, you know, these are my opinions, for somebody who likes to shop, the quality
it's the entire female
horrible.
Union likes to shop.
Pardon me?
The entire female union likes to shop.
Well, so I am trying to help out
The
economy. The best thing that could happen is to get clothing out of China, or to get them to start making things better. The quality and fit of anything that's come out of China has declined year by year, to the point where you could just as well buy a plastic garbage bag, cut holes in it, and wear it, and get the same type of fit and style. I know if even when I will look at labels in any store shopping, and I find that the quality of things made in Korea, the Philippines, India, the quality of the material, usually the fit, is far superior. I mean, I think that it's gotten so poor that the people are like, you know, why should I even bother shopping, buying or anything, or I'm going to buy something that is one size fits all, which doesn't work for a lot of people, but that's another story. And so you simply, until you are getting in the upper echelon, until you're starting to spend $200, $300, $400 for a dress, you're not getting anything of quality. How I feel when I shop, there's so little out there that's not a piece of ill-fitting polyester that is killing retail because there's nothing to buy. Same thing with shoes.
But what is
made so poorly.
How much of that is the, just shifting gears a second, I mean, I know back in my day when I you know worked for Pullman downtown, and that was back when all the guys wore a suit every day, and the women all wore you know, really good outfits. I mean, and went on the road, and you had to pack the stuff. And I mean, the ladies that I knew that were doing that and traveling, they would say you had to go out if you paid up and you got the right thing of clothes, it would last you. You could wear it, I'm going to say, once every 3 weeks, because obviously women don't want to wear guys wear the same suit once a week, but you can pack it. You look good on the road. It doesn't wrinkle, and the thing will last like 3 years. I mean, but they were willing to pay because the difference between something that was really good and it wasn't, if you put that kind of wear to it, it was worth it to pay up. But most people now don't. I mean, if a guy wears a suit, he wears it to a wedding and a funeral, basically. He's not wearing it, you know, once every other week or something, where people actually used to get two pairs of pants to the suit because the pants would wear out. I mean, you don't see any of that kind of hard wear in that stuff, and it doesn't surprise me when people buy something now, they don't really care about that. They just care, does it look good tonight? And I don't care if I throw it out tomorrow. I mean, it's a, some of it's a difference in attitude, I think, as much as it is a difference in quality.
I think it's both. I think when Casual Friday invaded the place, and now it's Casual Workday, which is fine. But I don't think there's quality at any, at almost any stage of clothing.
Buttons fall off,
seams unravel, shoes are poorly made, they hurt people's feet. So, you know, a little diversification and quality outside of other countries might inspire a little competition, and also the people who are ordering crap and selling it here, it might help them out to make a better product also.
Well, I mean, I don't, that whole retailing part, I mean, it seems like, you know, people want stuff definitely essentially cheaper. And then I'm not speaking for everybody, but I don't know the retailing group as much, obviously, as other people. I'm not a shopper type of crazy person, but it seems like whenever you see things, even my Duluth Trading that I order some stuff from, they used to have a page where you could buy blue jeans and I think khakis, I'm not positive, that were made in America, and they were $25 more than the other ones. They're not there anymore. Nobody bought them. I mean, I don't know that you can. I mean, women will spend God knows what for a pair of jeans if they look good, because they're, guys just want them to last like forever. But I don't know if anybody was willing to pay up for. I mean, women will if they look good, but if you say this pair will last you, you know, 50 more washings, I don't think they care about that as long as their shape looks good in there. If you know what I mean. But
I think you know what, I don't have a problem. I don't need it to last for a million years. But I need it to look good also. I'm not saying anything should be throwaway, but there's also a fine line between a piece of crummy polyester and something most young kids don't know is a beautiful piece of wool or silk, beautiful cotton that people, it's just so hard to find anymore.
Well, but the Chinese have done it. I'll take it. I haven't seen them in a while. When I used to dress up all the time, I used to love to get pants. They were half wool, half cashmere. And you paid through a nose for them. I mean, it was $1,000 or anything, but you paid up for those. And you know what?
But they're comfortable.
They lasted, and they were incredibly comfortable, way better than just plain wool. And a cashmere sweater, what were those 25 years ago? I mean, they were in the hundreds of dollars then. Well, now all of a sudden, Chinese got cashmere goats eating places into deserts where it's becoming, where they're eating the grass down to zero, and cashmere is like one-tenth the price. I don't think the quality is the same. But now,
cashmere. Now, and all the dust is blowing over here.
Yeah. Well, it's anyway. So, what's happening in the real estate world? I mean, your friend Nancy the other night, we had a nice dinner over at Bacchanalia's, and she was saying that the latest round of interest rate cuts has not really filtered its way down to the mortgages. They haven't really dropped as much as you would.
It's a lot of times people think that when they hear rate cut, that it immediately filters down to the mortgage world. It does not. That's what we should do. We have to have Nancy on to talk about the business, because she is probably one of the most informed people I know. I'll give her a plug. Nancy Long Graham over at Barracoon Financial Funding in Orland Park, probably one of the best mortgage brokers I've ever worked with. But yes, that's the thing, is rates are lower now. Yes, they've lower than they've been in quite a while. So if anybody is house hunting right now, what a great time to look. It's just a great value. You could shop around now. It's a good point. People don't realize you can shop your mortgages around, and you should shop them around. You should try and get the best fee. And again, as I've mentioned to your crowd before, that when you're looking for a mortgage rate, not only should you ask what the current rate is, but you should also ask what your APR rate is, which has all your cost rolls into it. So if your mortgage rate is maybe 3.5%, and you have a choice between an APR of 3 7/8 or 4.25%. Obviously, you want a place that's going to give you the lower cost at the 3 7/8. So, something everybody should be aware of when they're looking for a mortgage.
What right now, if you were to grab one, would you make a bet they're going to stay low and get one like the 3.25 5-year, or would you go for the full 30?
I'd lock it in. In the world as uncertain as it is right now, I don't see anything spiraling, but why would you not lock a 3.5% mortgage in if you can? You know, 3.5, 3.75. I think it would be foolish just not to lock that in.
Is there such a thing as a transferable mortgage anymore, or is that a shades of the past?
No, not normally. Sometimes you see a VA assumable, but no, there's nothing in it for the mortgage world to do that.
So. Not even on a jumbo?
No.
Now, when some of the places you've been selling lately have been a little higher priced. Are the people those jumbos? Are the people having trouble getting those, or are they easy to get?
No, well, if you've got the income like anything else, you could get it. The spread on the mortgage is not as big as it was in the past. So, you know, if you want a little bigger money, it's out there. You should definitely. It's a good environment right now. I mean, it's still a shortage of the type of homes. I still think, especially you're looking for a certain type in a certain neighborhood. Like if you're looking for a ranch, a lot of the senior group is looking for a ranch or a master on the main floor or townhomes in a ranch style. So a lot of times that's a little more difficult to find. But it is definitely a good money time to look. I think we're also bumping along the top here as far as price rates in our area. And I see a lot more price cuts than I've seen in a while. So I think all in all, it might be a good time to shop for a deal for a house and for a mortgage.
If you were to build one right now, it seems like from what you've been telling me, you and your gang, because I overhear the conversations because you guys are not shy. Just saying. It seems like if you had a, doesn't necessarily have to be a ranch, but you know, the master bedroom suite on the first floor and some sort of a either, quote, related living type of thing, or in case, you know, everybody gets to be 90 years old and doesn't want a nursing home and wants somebody to live there and take care of them, that first floor other person's room and bathroom is, everybody wants it now.
It is becoming a big change, and I still see a lot of these builders who aren't paying attention, I think, to a trend. They're still building these big homes with all the bedrooms upstairs, and that's what's sitting on the market a lot. The resale that I've seen is anything with four or five bedrooms upstairs, no living space on the main floor, is a very difficult product to move out here, especially if it's not completely HGTV state-of-the-art ready. So those are a real struggle. But the world is changing a little bit, and what you're seeing something that you and I saw very much growing up, where either some of the family lived with you, grandma or grandpa might have lived with you, or somebody came back home for whatever reason. Before it was you lived with your mom and dad, so you saved enough money to go out and buy your own home. So that is starting to be seen as something that people are asking for. They want the main level master, either for themselves to plan ahead, so that they're not moving again, which all goes back to the recession. People aren't moving as much. They're staying in place. They're fixing their homes. They're making the way they want. But a lot of people, especially if your buyers in their 40s, they're already planning ahead that age, a disability, or sheer convenience. If you don't want to walk up and down 15 to 20 stairs every time, maybe you forgot something in the bedroom, you want to comb your hair or get a different pair of shoes, that main floor master comes in very handy. And like I said, if somebody's an elderly relative is going to come live with you, it makes it easier. You get older, maybe you even need a caregiver. To age in place is something that's becoming, for sure, the baby boom or something that they started thinking about a few years ago, and it's becoming a reality. And I think, especially with the advent of Uber, Lyft, and maybe driverless cars, if some people could age in their homes, they may not have to move. I think all of those possibilities. And a lot of people, older people, move because they can't get out of their house. They can't get to the doctor. They can't shop. Well, between orders eating on Amazon for your groceries or whoever, having your medication delivered, being able to have a car take you somewhere, you may be able to age in place and not move out of your chosen neighborhood throughout your life.
Well, I was always fascinated by that one buddy of yours, the guy who was 90-ish in the nursing home and wanted to come out and build himself a house. But he was
Bob. He's a great guy.
But he wanted
smart man.
He thought that if And again, obviously, if you've ever been in like a home for somebody handicapped, the doors are wider and so forth. But his idea was that you could build a home essentially designed for somebody who's either injured, because you never know if you're going to get injured. How you get injured, you know, walking off the curb today and all of a sudden be on crutches. His idea was if you made all the doors 36 inches, if you made all the bathrooms big enough to where the shower was, people
would
walk in.
Well, that would be today's standards, which is what everybody, the builders are building now, to somewhat. But no, you're asking, but to retrofit your existing housing stock, especially in my area, and I think you know that, the Oak Lawn, Palis, areas, Orland, the aging group there, a lot of times they want to stay to be close to their friends and family, and it's impossible, you're right, because of the narrowness of the doorways without spending a lot of money that those people can't. But I think the homes that could be retrofitted is another potential industry.
Well, plus, it's also, if you did it all that way, it would not only look okay, it would look nice. I like a big.
I
love a big shower you can walk in.
You should make, you should build a home that doesn't scream handicapped accessible, but just an open floor plan that makes it also easier to age in place, or if you're disabled, to live your life.
Yeah, I would think, you know, even like, I love big showers anyway. The idea of showering in a tub to me is disgusting, but that's what I do. You know. I mean, whatever. I mean, we can do a lot of this if we want to. And I guess when people talk about there's not enough jobs, well, what do you suppose? Even in homes with a lot of the older people that don't have the money, I'm not going to get into my interest rate rant, but people, what do you suppose that the average home that's even 25 years old in Orland that it looks nice on the outside, how much money do you think the thing needs to be made current? I mean, there's nothing but work available everywhere.
Oh. Absolutely, and there's not enough people around that. People are always asking me to recommend a handyman to do something. So if you have skills, electrical, carpenter, basic skills that a lot of times even seniors simply can't because they can't. You know, arthritis, handicaps, whatever, simple jobs are beyond them that would, A, keep the value of their house up, make them more livable. But yeah, even your average person who lives there after 25 years, things are old. They need to be updated to be current for resale, but also just because things start breaking and falling apart.
Well, they always talk about, I mean, it's not the same kind of, you know, carbon footprint as some, you know, airplane flying through the, you know, the upper atmosphere, but we do nothing but rant and rave against the automobile industry. Yet, I'm going to say that not every single house, but 80% of the houses in this country need some semblance of windows, doors, or insulation or something. I mean, there's buildings downtown that I've read, we could cut the carbon footprint by a massive amount in one building. And if you put the new kind of windows in and this and that and the other. I mean, we don't even talk about that. I mean, there's work there there's millions and millions of hours worth of work doing this stuff. And,
the problem is a lot of people don't have the money. If you imagine retrofitting all these skyscrapers, what it would do to rents and, condos ownership and special assessments. Some buildings downtown, as you know, have done it, have to do it, and somebody could slap the $25,000 or $50,000 special assessment for their building. They're usually not the happiest people in the world.
Well, it's pretty hard to do it.
It has to be done. It's just like they had to resurface what the Aon building, when it was a Standard Oil building, where all of the marble deteriorated.
The marble replacement costs like what, twice as much as the original building?
Yep.
Or some incredible. What, how much, I have to ask you that, how much degradation on the homes and on people's well-being is this incredible ramp up in taxes in some of these areas? I mean, it seems like the Illinois community, and I don't think we're only halfway there. We're still talking about the city being $1 billion in hack this year, budget, and then the state's not really gained on it much. I mean, how much of people is the drain? The money just isn't there. You never saw old people not maintain homes. Those are people that grew up, you know, they're like our parents, for God's sake, only a little younger. I mean, there was never a blade of grass it didn't salute when they went by, and all of a sudden roofs aren't. I mean, I think these people don't have the dough.
They don't have the money, and you've seen people whose taxes are, I would say, the average senior who's lived in their home for a long time has seen their taxes, I bet, go up, on a tax bill that maybe was $3,000 when they bought it, are probably looking at an $8,000 tax bill now. And again, like one of your favorite subjects, none of their money's earning any interest in the bank.
Right.
So life for seniors, or anybody on a fixed income, has the quality of life has decreased dramatically because their source of income is down. So everybody likes low interest rates except people who actually have to live off their investments. And, you know, that's a whole other downside is, well, we know that you know.
Well, not to mention, if they ever get out with ran a prescription drug, where were those up in the last 10 years? You know, there's no inflation.
Well, I find it very interesting that some of the drugs on Medicare cost more than on regular insurance, and that I found another interesting thing out is that you can't use a internet coupon on drugs because the government won't allow you to. So you actually end up paying more for the drug on Medicare than you did as a regular consumer.
That's special.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I don't... So what are, is the people you're working with in the city yard, is, you only got a couple of minutes, is the city going to come back? I've seen some areas, the areas you've done some, sold some places over on the south side, like along 83rd Street there, at 83rd, 87th, that Chatham corridor, massive amounts of rehab going on there. There's some pockets obviously the bullets are flying by, but are there people starting to look at these places and say, hey, there's some room here for us?
I think there's a lot of renovation. A lot of my friends that are renovating in areas, there's pockets all over the city that are picking up. A lot of developers are targeting the Inglewood area. Also the area right around like 79th to 95th, east of Western, all the way to the Ryan. There's groups of homes being renovated beautifully. I think a lot of it is people are... The margin of what you could buy these homes for, build them for, and renovate them for, and sell them to somebody. It's becoming harder to... Everybody wants to flip homes. They watch too much TV. They think it's easy. You're not going to find something at the absolute rock bottom, probably. And if you do, that means everything needs to be done to it. So I think that... And the activities there, I think people want to do it. I think people want to buy it. I think that it would be a natural progression to keep the city growing. But I think that what's holding people back is just the state of Illinois, the state of Cook County. People don't know what's going to happen. They're unsure.
Sure they do. They know what's going to
happen. Their taxes are still going to keep going crazy. They're like, well, I had a couple of developer friends saying, I don't know if I'd rather just cross the border, go renovate something in Indiana for somebody who's going to leave town and go live there. So you get some of the people with money who are sitting at the sidelines watching to see what's going to happen here.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, even at the old shindig we had at Ogden doing, somebody was telling me they could move to Memphis or Nashville and their taxes are like $4,000 instead of $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big difference. Well, I thank you very much. Give yourself a shameless plug. How do they find you?
Well, you give me a call at 708-846-6494, call or text me at that number, or contact me at my site at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Thanks, Aud. Luckbox Magazine, the Guide to Money and Probability, is available on newsstands, $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. You know, Maddie, I get both of them, and I didn't even have to sign up.
Nice.
S&P futures up 13.75. Again, a huge turn from last night. We'll come back with David to tell us all about the overnight trading.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities.
Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Webber, aboard. I'm Mr. David Ailman in a second. S&P futures up 1375. NASDAQ futures up 46 after being down huge last night on the opening. Dow's up 170. I'm going to say last night it was down as much as 400, maybe. So we've had a big flip. As the president says, China called twice. We're getting back to the table. China denies ever calling. But they said they would go back to the table if the right, you know, whatever. So there's a little bit of a thawing this morning, and I'm hoping that the two of them made enough money where they'll stop doing this, or maybe they'll just be encouraged. I don't know. I think I'm probably just getting encouraged. It's just going to be me, however. Manny, why don't you do traffic, weather, and sports because my machine is bonky again.
I can do that, sure. We're pretty jammed up out there, Chief, due to some rainy and foggy conditions throughout the area.
And my clean truck.
Yes, just perfect timing to get your car washed yesterday. We have a crash now on the inbound Edens just before Devon Avenue that's causing the Edens to be jammed up. But the Kennedy, Eisenhower, and Stevenson are moving very slowly right now. High traffic volumes, no accidents to report, but jammed up nonetheless. Southside expressways are looking okay. Still have US 41 in the North Shore closed between Clavie Road and Deerfield Road due to an earlier crash. That has US 41 completely closed on that northbound side. And then just to the west of there in Deerfield, Whalen Road at Deerfield Parkway is closed in the North Shore. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of storms in the area and humidity in between showers. A high of 75. Right now it's rainy and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, mostly sunny and hot with a high of 108 today. Right now it's partly cloudy and 90. In sports, Cubs were swept at home over the weekend against the Nationals, losing yesterday.
First time in like a real long time.
Yeah, in 11 innings. 7-5 was the final on that one. They kept coming back, but just could not get the lead, and the Nationals' bullpen was a little bit better than the Cubs' bullpen, and that was it. So the Cubs are now 2.5 back of the Cardinals in the NL Central. Still have a game and a half lead over Philadelphia in for that second wild card spot. But Cubs fading a little bit after they got off to a good start on the homestand. White Sox shut out the Angels, or Rangers, I should say, 2-0. Diamondbacks beat the Brewers 5-2. Chief.
Dex up 40. It's 0.3%. FTSE down 33.5. Kakaran up 25.5 over in Asia. Kind of a wrong read there because they're all down heavy. I just say that because they were down before this, all this news came out with Trump and the Chinese. David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, I have to say, I watched the Cub game yesterday pretty much. Now I've got to the point where I'm hitting the pause. I'm running, get my stuff ready for the show, looking at the articles and everything. And I can't watch it. I mean, I watched the Dodger game last night. Now that's unusual because all those guys like to leave early. Seventh, eighth inning, nobody's there. So finally I was so bored, I was timing. Who's the wacko relief pitcher with the beard that looks like when he gets the sign, he looks like a penguin or a bird or something?
Kimbrel for the Cubs?
Yeah. I timed him. If the batter stepped out of the batter's box, it was over 40 seconds between pitch. If they didn't, he got in at 37, 38. Maybe that's double the rule. I mean, we're not even...
Yeah, there's no point in having the rule if they're not going to enforce it.
But I don't think these guys... You could never go to 20 seconds. This is just evolved into this. The umpires feel it's the right pace. The manager feels it's the right. And the people in the stands, there's nobody there. I mean, it was a 4-hour game before they went in extra innings. It ended up being what? Almost 4.5, 5?
I'd have to look.
I mean, there was still, I don't think it ended until like 5:20 or something. It's just too long. I mean, what are we doing?
That would be a 4-hour 11-inning game. That's probably normal for an 11-inning game.
But at the end of 9, it was pushing 3:50. So it was more than that then. Maybe it was 6 o'clock. Thing was over, but it was bad. I mean, and I don't know. I just can't even be. And you look up in the stands, and everybody's gone. Does anybody? I mean, nobody complains. They just go and spend some time and leave. They don't care. Just seems like it's a, but I mean it's not just because now that I'm putting it on hold. In football, you can speed back because it's all the breaks. It's all the breaks in the game. But in baseball, that's not the case at all. It's just time between pitches. It's like doubled.
Yeah. Well, I've said it before. Certain organizations are actually preaching to their pitchers to hold the ball longer in between pitches because it's been proven that for every like second that you wait longer between pitches, you can throw like 1/10 of a mile per hour faster. So if a guy, you know, if a guy could peaks at 97, if he waits, if he goes too fast for his next pitch, like if he only goes 20 seconds, he might only be able to throw 96. If he waits like 35, 40 seconds, it goes back up to his full velocity level. It's a really weird like thing that there's a big long article about it, but that type of stuff. I mean, teams will absolutely trade the game lasting a little bit longer for their pitcher to throw a little faster.
Well, it probably would work for like boxers. Every time you threw a couple punches, you could back off and rest for 5 or 10 seconds, get back together and throw a couple more. Probably the punches would be harder too.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of it though.
I agree. But when you're talking about a relief pitcher, now for your starter, you don't really care about that. You want him to get it and go. That's why the first 6 innings usually go by relatively fast. But the reliever, when you want that guy throwing 97, 98, because he's going to face two batters, it makes a lot of sense for him to hold it for 45 seconds.
Well, whatever it is, it's just it's seemingly like it's taking a while. What exactly is that stance of that guy? Audrey goes, what is this guy doing? Is he taking off? I don't know.
It's like his steadying thing that he does. I don't know.
I bet he's not a duck, that guy.
Closers usually are.
Yeah, remember who was the wacky guy that Cubs had years ago? The Mitch Williams?
Yeah, Wild Thing.
Yeah, and then there was the guy from the
That shooter Beck, Rod Beck,
the Mad Hungarian. Remember him? It was too long ago for you.
Yeah,
he's still doing. He's still doing St. Louis radio, isn't he? What's his name? The Mad Hungarian, the guy would he turn
Al Hrabowski or
yeah, Al Hrabowski. He'd turn around and he'd look into the outfield and he'd slap the ball in the mitt and turn around and try and intimidate you. he was cool. Anyway, David, what the hell happened last night? What were Spoo's down? I thought I saw him down 70, but they weren't down 70.
No. Low on the mini was 28-10 and a quarter, which is 59 handles lower, so like 45 and a half. That's a number.
I thought when I first kicked it on, it must have been a misprint right on the opening because it said they were down 70, and then right away they corrected it to being down 40.
Yeah, 45 and a half.
Yeah, it was. Well, that's still. I mean,
that's almost double what they were down at the close Friday.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden we started with the two countries looked at the market and told their buddies to buy it, and then said something conciliatory, and that's it.
You know what? As I've admitted and apologized in the past, you used to take your conspiracy theories and say, oh, come on, this is an efficient market. But I've really come across the line. I thought of that exact same thing last night.
I don't see how if you don't do it, how do people around you? And even if I'm soft on accusing the Trump White House, because I honestly don't think anybody gets to see this guy's tweets before they go out. But I'm convinced the Chinese are doing it.
I have this strange feeling in line with the chief's conspiracy theory. I have this feeling that Mnuchin sees him. Former Goldman Sachs guys,
yeah.
Trump had ties to him, and right at the same time, literally, I guess, within 2 minutes of the tweet, and maybe it was even before, but I think it was a minute afterwards, he tweeted that if the Chinese are serious about these talks, which the transmission would have been very quick to him, that we would snap up a deal, quote unquote, in a second.
We haven't solved any of the major stuff that they keep bringing up.
I don't know. Maybe just as an olive branch or
yeah.
Whatever. I could see that Trump saying, hey, I'll hold off September 1st because we are going to have talks in September, but they'll intercept all the fentanyl coming in.
Well, whatever it is, it seems to be. This morning on the way in, they were talking about lobster exports to China are down 80%. I mean, there's people getting hurt here.
No question.
Well, and
I was at a wedding out of town, and I met some folks that I literally didn't know. And one in particular, he's been in the furniture business for 35 years or something like that. And he was describing how the industry has changed, from North Carolina and Mississippi and Wisconsin, where that was 95% of the industry to China being 95% of the industry and whatever. And he absolutely says that since these tariffs have gone by that, I mean, China's still by far the biggest, but that their share has gone down from 95%, at least in his business, and he operates for some major, major, major players, that his business, that China's down about 20%, that it absolutely in a matter of months has moved to Thailand, Singapore, and Vietnam really quickly.
Well, I was quoting David Andelman this morning before you got on. How much influence does China have over those places?
Evidently not. And
I asked him that exact question.
I said, since China came to the aid of Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City and the whole bit, and he said they've had falling outs in their. Yes, China could be obviously a military threat, but that they're not that close trading partners at all. That they definitely are in competition.
All right, so for it to happen that fast,
I mean, he said literally in a matter of months.
Okay,
I mean, not big, huge pieces, and he also made the statement that what has moved, whether it's 20% or 30% of China's furniture business, and I talked to some other people and. Publishing and minor production business. He said that even if there's a deal, He said, even with size, he says, once they move like this and build factories and get labor in or whatever, he says it's not coming back.
Well, is it? I guess my question is, and I was talking with Kevin about it earlier, I'd love to have an expert, an expert, as they used to say on Channel 26. I don't know the vagaries of this. I mean, is the China stuff just going through the parts now going to Vietnam, being assembled there and coming this way? I mean, is it the entire soup to nuts production in 7 months now being done in Vietnam versus China? I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, I don't know. The other interesting thing that he told me about was that it's not all one way or the other. I mean, I really thought, in the, not taking a political stance at all, but I thought, you know, that Trump was, you know, kind of full of it when he said, oh, you know, they're writing checks to us for, you know, $60 billion and all this other stuff. It's, I always thought the importer and whatever pays it, and then it ends up being the consumer. He said it's not one way or the other. He said what happens is, yes, at the import thing, you know, the fee is paid, but that it's well negotiated before, and he can't tell you, you know. I said, well, if it's an electronic piece at Best Buy, and he knows buyers for Best Buy, non-furniture, and he said what happens is they absolutely negotiate it, and he said no question that the importers and the, eventually the U.S. public is paying the majority of it. He said a lot of it is negotiated half and half, where Chinese manufacturers just say, hey, you know what, we'll eat half of it.
As you've heard me say,
That surprised me.
Why? Because I've been saying that for months. You have to take each and every product.
Yeah.
And it has to do, and this, the part, the problem is my criticism is, I don't think our gentleman in the White House is. I mean, there's no doubt if a Chinese manufacturer has 8% of the market and it's as close to perfectly competitive as you can get. I can't name a market like that, but if you had one, I mean, honestly, I can't. But if that was the case, and it was a small enough number, let's say it was you know, whatever, shot glasses. If it turns out that they're made everywhere. And they cost a buck at IKEA, and that's just what they cost for the Japan or for the Chinese guy to enter the market. Instead of bringing it in at 50 cents plus 10%, he's going to bring it in at 46% or 45.5%.
Right. That's what ends up happening.
Because it ends up happening.
This guy.
However, if they're the only people that make shot glasses, they're saying, "I want my 45 cents or 50 cents," and the IKEA is paying the nickel, bringing it in, whoever the importer is, and they're going up 5 cents.
Right.
Because they're going up on the value coming in, not the retail price.
Right.
So they're going up to 5 cents. Now, as you know, Dan sits right next to you. So his buddies that he plays ball with are in the auto glass business and have been forever. And China has some percentage of that business, not 100%, but the day that the thing went 10%, we're not talking about wholesale prices. Everybody in this country raised their price 10%, which shouldn't be 10% on retail.
Right.
But it was, because people are taking advantage of it.
They still want the margin.
They just want the margin. And it's not a very competitive business. Well, my thought is virtually no businesses now are very competitive. So if you know that, like I don't think the president knows or cares, that if you think that they're not all that competitive, your tariff might actually have a worse effect than the 10%.
No question.
I mean, you don't know, but yes, if in a competitive world, the Chinese are not paying any of the tariffs, but they're eating them. There is a difference.
No question.
But I don't think. I mean, like I said, name me two products that are perfectly competitive. I can't name, other than corn and soybeans. I can't name you two. I mean, you know, saloons.
And who even knows with even soybeans with basis differentials and, you know. I mean, it's more competitive than wheat, where there's substantial difference between, you know, domestic wheat and world wheat and durum and, you know, hard red winter and all this other, you know, there's 22 grades and you know, you get lost. So, I mean, soybeans, I think, I mean, there are different, you know, number one, number two or whatever, but I think you're very close to the mark. That's pretty competitive.
Well, what I'm saying is, if one or two farmers or grain elevators or haulers or people decide to go out of business or go into business, it doesn't affect price at all. That's what I mean by being competitive. One person can't influence the industry. Where clearly, there aren't very many industries like that. I mean, one saloon in a neighborhood where there's 50 saloons closing or opening probably doesn't affect the price of beer at all.
Right.
But now, name me. I mean, I think Boeing affects the price of planes a little bit. Do you think?
Yes.
And so I mean, you don't know, but the fact is, some people here are getting hurt going out, and some people are getting hurt coming in, and some people here are taking advantage of it. If you're in a business where 20% of the stuff sold is being made in America by like two firms, and you see a tariff go up 30%, you go, Yahoo! It's. I don't know. It's akin, David, to if you've been in the restaurant business 50 years and you own your building and you see all these other people getting leased out of everything. Now, you're paying higher taxes, too, probably. You see these other people's leases going up, and you see omelets going for $12.50 a throw when you can buy eggs for 50 cents a dozen at the restaurant depot. Your margin starts going through the roof because you don't have the fixed. Now, of course, you could turn around and sell your property, probably, and get some huge, so you're not doing this scot-free because you're essentially charging yourself too little rent, right?
No, I get it. I get exactly what you're saying.
But the fact is that when you have a president clucking about how much money he's collecting on tariffs and what a great thing it is, I mean clearly the man doesn't understand.
Quote, unquote, I love tariffs.
Yeah, I love tariffs. Well, okay, our people are paying that. Now, There hasn't been a Chinese person that has actually written a check for a tariff.
No.
They may lower their price. They may do something to even it up and make it competitive.
And I agree with what you were saying before. The big difference between what they're paying and what they're swallowing. And, I was wrong on this. As I told you, two sources, in the industry for decades said that, China's swallowing or negotiating part of it, which actually surprised me. But at least at this point, I would be surprised if they wrote any checks to the U.S. Treasury.
Well, Goldman Sachs, this is a few weeks ago, I'm sure I got it buried in my emails to myself. They did some kind of a study. Now, again, I have no idea how rigorous, David, those guys do their stuff. I think sometimes probably very rigorously and other times not. They were stunned at how much they estimated that China was going to have to swallow a lot more than they found them swallowing.
You're right.
That China really was not doing as nearly as poorly as, but they have the ability to find other buyers as well.
Sure.
I mean, if some of the furniture production is starting up in Vietnam to come here, maybe they're selling more to Europe. I don't know. I mean,
maybe, although a lot of it literally, according to this guy, is literally factories and, closed. And were rebuilt in other countries. It wasn't like they were sitting there with inventory and, oh, geez, can we sell to Brazil?
Yeah, I'm surely not saying that that's not the case. I wonder, I'd like to have an expert.
It was eye-opening, this conversation.
Well, I'll tell you what, if one of those dudes that you met, I'm dying to know what makes something Vietnamese versus Chinese, what degree of assembly, what degree of, if you can make all the legs, the cushions, and everything else, just assemble it in Vietnam. You're saying that's not happening, but I mean, when a ship comes out of China, and you want to make it Vietnamese, do you wave to the coastline? Do you have to stop and unload? Or does it have to be a purchase and a sale?
Know.
I mean, how does that all even work?
I don't know. Maybe I can get this guy on the show.
Yeah, because I think that's all fascinating. I said earlier, on a scale of 1 to 10, I probably am a 4 on international trade movements. I'm probably a 1 when it comes to, I don't know how much, with this South Korea-Japan thing. David, I have no idea. How much do those guys even trade with each other? How serious is that?
I don't know. Supposedly it's serious. And at the same time, supposedly, we made a trade deal with Japan. Or at least, in quote-unquote in principle, whatever that means.
I don't see how you can make a trade deal with every one of these people individually when they're all yoked together.
And that's the whole argument. And again, I'm no expert, so I'm not lying with or against Trump. But, he basically said, this TPP is never going to happen. I don't like it. Even many Democrats don't like it. And all trade deals other than U.S., Canada, and Mexico, that'll be trilateral. Everything else is going to be bilateral. We'll negotiate with who we want to negotiate one-on-one.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure, but I'm not all that close to it, but I don't see how that can... It seems to me, how do you police that when you can flip it back and forth in all these different places?
I don't know.
All right, just, well, whatever, right? So what is last night say to your charts?
Well, the only thing is, there is huge, huge, huge technical support basis of the September mini S&P at 2,800. And the low last night was 2,810 and a quarter. Well, 2,810 is not 2,800, but it's pretty darn close. And that would have been without the overnight action. If we were at 2,860 and the low is 2,850, I would have said, hey, 2,800 is, and not because it's a round number. I mean, that's where the old highs line up and should be support.
What happened to the 2,840 number that Kenny and everybody was talking about for a while? What was that?
Yeah, that's an Elliott Wave retracement Fibonacci crap. I don't believe in that stuff.
All right.
But 2,800 to now 2,810.
Besides, Fibonacci's dead, right?
Yeah, the late 1800s.
Yeah.
It should be really good support. And upside, you know, 2940 was a bunch of moving averages. It got there, you know, on the rally last week, didn't make it. So 2940, 2950 front month S&P is a sell.
All right, well, I mean, I don't...
And in between, just stands between the raindrops and don't get married to anything.
Well, you know what I've found is I've been telling some clients, well, that they see it on their sheets, is that, you know, with the protected program, David, whenever it runs way down, I mean, clearly you roll your puts, and
right.
And I mean, everybody can see this by going to our website, but and on the way up, you roll them the other way. And every time you get to one of those edges, you know, you get the feeling, God, is it really going to keep going here? Should I not do the roll or the way up?
It doesn't seem to. It's in that range. So, like I said, 2940, 50 is sell, 2800 to 2810 is a buy.
Well, I mean, it seems like that every one of the, I use the term routine trades, that routine adjustments in our program, most of them have been good trades.
Right.
You know, I mean, just because they're routine doesn't mean that, you know, they're the right ones.
Well, sometimes, you know, it'll be violated.
Yeah.
But right now it's fairly clear, at least from a technical standpoint.
Well, like I said, I mean, people ask you, how do you trade in the market? And I said, well, we're sort of set up in advance to be buying low and selling high. Now, clearly, if you buy a put, and the thing runs down, and it's just going to run down and keep running down, you never want to let loose of that put,
right?
Because whenever you do a roll, you're essentially putting more risk on the table. But you're making the point that if you buy the thing at, you know, if it's a regular stack at 100 and it runs down to 90, I mean, you don't want to be sitting there with the 100 put. You'll at least roll it down to the 95s or something.
Right,
so,
right.
And, but obviously you're putting some more dough on the table. But if you go down to 90, you go, oh, man, this thing looks like it's going down to zero. And we do the roll virtually every time. It's been the right trade.
Right.
And, I mean, one day it won't be, you know, because we'll roll it and we'll say, what do we do that for? It's now 40, you know, type of thing. But I'm looking at some of these individual areas. I mean, we see this thing bounce today, and, you know, the right guys are bouncing, the Apple, the Boeing, those kind of guys. David, I'm looking at these steel stacks. Has the man put these companies out of business? And they're going to zero.
They really look terrible. I haven't owned one for probably 3 years, well, way, even before the tariffs.
It some of the people in Indiana are on these aluminum companies. They're going, God, they're going to zero.
And not good.
Well, wasn't this the
and
campaign?
That's one of the things, as we talked about last week. You'll get bounces, but you got to be very careful about owning silver as well.
Well, last night it was up 27 cents.
Yeah, it's up 19 and a half as I look at it now.
I got the SOV up a dime, but last night it was up almost 30 at right. One point. I just, you know, I mean, somebody's, every day I look at these AKS, X, even like a Cleveland Cliffs. I look at them and I go, let's wait till tomorrow, and they're lower tomorrow.
Right.
I've yet to pull the trigger. I mean, are they really, we're supposed to be bringing all this business back here, and these companies are going to zero. I don't, yeah, I'm missing the whole point of what we're doing. As you well know. Right. SP Futures now up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 58. Huge run from last night, probably 65 points. Thank you, David. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.